When you hear the phrase soft as steel, what do you think of? While the word steel might conjure up images such as massive high-rise buildings, where does the soft part come in? And what exactly does this mean in our work and in our lives? Welcome to the Soft as Steel podcast with your host, Dennis Duran, featuring engaging conversations with a wide range of industry leaders around soft skills, how we practice love, inclusion, social justice, and compassionate leadership that's everlasting in the workplace. And now, here's Dennis Duran.
I'm excited about the conversation I'm about to have with my guest today, Leandris Wheadon. Leandris has over 18 years' experience in the construction industry, focused primarily on healthcare and medical buildings. He's worked in other sectors as well. He has a passion for continuous improvement, respect for people, and creating value for both internal and external stakeholders. As a building scientist, Leandris seeks innovative ways to streamline processes from design and fabrication to transportation and construction. With a customer-centric approach, he believes that everyone, whether a team member or a client, deserves exceptional service built on a foundation of respect for people. In the dynamic world of construction, Leandris recognizes that success hinges on relationships. Whether collaborating with colleagues or engaging with clients, he embodies a spirit of teamwork and shared goals. All of the things he values are wrapped up as key ingredients in the practice of lean construction. Leandris holds a variety of credentials and certifications he has earned during his career. Notably, he is the very first lean practitioner to earn the Lean Construction Institute's Certified Practitioner Construction designation. This credential is a standard of excellence in lean construction. It recognizes the applied lean knowledge and skills of construction professionals. Currently, Leandris is a superintendent / lean advocate for Leighton Construction. His role there is to mentor and coach operations personnel to leverage lean principles and systems to benefit project outcomes. Leandris, welcome to the Soft to Steel podcast.
Thanks for that great welcome, Dennis. I appreciate it.
You deserve it. You deserve it. I mean, these are largely your words, but they ring true. And so I'm going to get right to something which I think is so vitally important about you, and that is how committed and how expert you become in a way of delivering construction projects, which should be the norm, but is still progressing and taking on, you know, more territory, becoming more the preferred way of delivering projects. But talk about your road from your first exposure. Take a few minutes and talk about how and when you engaged with lean as a way of doing building. You have other credentials in design, build, and other things, construction management. But tell the audience a little bit about your beginnings and your journey in lean.
Yeah, I can do that, going down kind of that road. And my beginning starting there, I would say, is around 2014. First, I heard anything about, really wasn't even the word lean. It was a lot of that revolved around Toyota, but I was in Cincinnati, Ohio, working out at Cincinnati Children's Hospital with a team of folks there. We're doing some things, daily huddles, call them pod meetings, plan of the days, reverse phase, scheduling meetings, which is like some pool planning, looking at weekly work plans. And it's a bunch of terms that were going around. I really had no clue what they were. I was just like, hey, man, this is part of what we're doing. Let's go do it, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm going to figure out a way to fit in there. But eventually, I discovered that a lot of those things had similar early beginnings. They came from Toyota. They were part of the Last Planner system. At that time, I never heard of the Last Planner system. Really didn't even know much about the Lean Construction Institute either. Mm-hmm. So I did those things there, and a few years later, got exposed to Last Planner system, started doing some kind of investigative work, reading books, got into some stuff like the Toyota Way, 2-second lean, and just was kind of saying, okay, man, how does any of this apply to what we do in design and construction? Mm-hmm. Trying to figure out a way to take things from other industries and make them applicable to design and construction was really what got me interested in that path.
Mm-hmm. You know, actually, I think we mentioned earlier, or I listened to you, you talked about the difference between production and productivity. Those two words kind of get at it.
Yes.
And again, the whole notion you know, the phrase that's always associated with lean is this notion of driving out waste in all parts of the life cycle of a project, in all aspects of it. Say a little bit more about that and why that's so fundamental and so differentiating as far as a lean approach to construction.
Oh man, that's a mouthful there, Dennis. I say just starting with, lean to me, lean's a lot of things to a lot of people. It probably has evolved over the years, but I mean, what we look at from the LCI standpoint, it's really a mindset and a way to operate on a project. When you get into talking about productivity and production, I mean, those are conversations that a lot of people in design and construction don't necessarily have all the knowledge about, but we're all interested in those things because they're going to help some of the outputs that we desire. So like for me, you mentioned productivity. A lot of what we look at is productivity. You know, how do we make different processes and the steps better? But the thing that we have to remember is just because we optimize one process of the system doesn't mean that the whole system is optimized. Mm-hmm. So we really need to be looking at, you know, how does this affect the whole system? And a lot of it is relates to the basics of production. You know, what is throughput? What is our cycle times? What does our working process look like? You know, and getting a basic understanding of that. So I think just being naturally inquisitive, that has allowed me to explore some other things outside of, you know, kind of the traditional lean world.
Your role at Layton, was that designed to incorporate and to enable you to be able to bring as much of the lean systems and tools to Layton as you could?
Quite honestly, I just kind of fell into this role. I mean, I came here, superintendent went out to Utah, was working on a project. We had another gentleman who was working with one of the healthcare clients that was doing something similar in a kind of a lean advocate, lean manager role. He transitioned out of the company and they were looking for somebody else to do it. And I said, you know what? Hey, this is an opportunity. Why not step up and see what this opportunity could present itself to be. So that's how I kind of got involved in that role in particular.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can say as a comment about what you've said so far, that among other people, that Dan Fauché will be very pleased to listen to you talk about lean, because I'm sure that you know who he is.
Yes.
You know, he's a man bigger than life. Who I've known for a long time, and he's a great guy. We had a great conversation. He was one of my guests a while back on the podcast. We had a great conversation, probably could have gone for hours because both of us like to talk. But it's more important for me to listen and let you talk. So let's say that's all the technical operational process stuff associated with lean. I think that's sufficient for our audience. But what I'm really interested in talking about what is important from the standpoint, and again, I remember vividly, the approach that I took to my keynote was basically to talk about a range of different things. And I examined, if you will, the values and other information that the LCI has put out, and the fundamental foundation for the whole lean movement is respect for people. Talk about that and how in front of mind and probably as in back of mind as well, but how you operationalize that in a basic but in all encompassing way to how you go about doing everything you do with the tools and the systems, et cetera.
And that is a great question, especially when you get into respect for people. I mean, I think at the heart of the thing, it's really just treating people like human beings, you know what I mean? Treating people with respect and not only as people, but, you know, as the workers that are out here doing these projects. How can we make, you know, really this the best job or project that they've ever worked on? What can we do from a CMGC standpoint? You know, a lot of people look at it as, you know, these trade partners, these subcontractors, these vendors, they work for us. They do what we tell them to do. To me, I think it's kind of the other way around, because we're just a middleman in the CMGC world. We really should be looking, how can we best serve these folks and make their jobs easier? So I think that's where a lot of the, at least for me, where the respect for people come from, you know, treating people like human beings, being kind to one another. You know, really, you got to be kind to yourself before you can start being kind to others. You got to look at yourself in the mirror and figure out, you know, hey, how can I lead myself better before I can start leading other people better? Mm-hmm. So I think it all kind of starts encompassing things. But like you say, a lot of people say these are soft skills. I say, well, they may be called soft skills, but they're very hard to do and to become good at. So I call them hard skills, mm-hmm. in essence.
Yeah, very, very well said. In fact, among other phrases that I've promulgated, I use the phrase that soft skills are the hardest to learn. Mm-hmm. And I further that by saying it's because in order to learn about soft skills, you first have to recognize that we're talking about yours and others, but we have to begin with you.
Yes.
And so that's the challenge, and that's what I continue to try to convey the message about that. And that's why I was so pleased and excited to be asked to share remarks at that Congress back in 2022, I guess, because that's what I talk about. And I know that, you know, we are, as an industry, we're facing, you know, there are a number of, let's call them challenges and opportunities facing our industry. Mm-hmm. And the one that very directly connects to this notion of respect for people is the manpower issue. Finding, attracting, developing, and retaining the workers that are necessary to sustain the operations of general contractors and the trades contractors. And so when we think about respect for people, that should cascade a positive effect on how we go about treating people every day, both in the process of trying to find them, to hire them, as well as how they're treated once they come on board. What are your thoughts about that?
I believe that relates a lot to even, you know, 5S. You know, not only having a job site that's, you know, in order, straightened, but also that is sanitary, clean for folks to want to come work there. You know, if you look at a lot of construction job sites, I mean, you walk into a port-a-john, it's like, I don't know if I want to use the restroom in there, you know. So taking that a little further, it's like, man, this really goes beyond, you know, what we think it does. It goes beyond really just making sanitary work conditions for the men and women that are out there doing these jobs. I mean, a lot of times we lose track of that. We're focused on other things. A lot of it is administrative stuff and trying to push things and get things done. If we step back and think about, hey, you know, what is it like to come work here at this job site every day? Mm-hmm. You know, is this a place that I want my family members or my friends to come and work at? Mm-hmm. You know, how are we really treating people out here? Are we taking the time to get to know what they need from us and vice versa? Mm-hmm. So we can provide that type of job site, because I mean, it is a tough industry. I mean, you get to work in all the elements. It's not necessarily something that a lot of people want to do, but how do you make that work environment more attractive to people that say, hey, you can come make a great living in construction and design industry, and it's going to be a place where we can allow you to work somewhere where you actually want to go to work at, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you think about, again, staying with the manpower topic, We can drill down a little bit on that to say that there is a front page headline emphasis, first and foremost, currently, on women in the construction industry. I mean, because again, when you think about it, just from a pure numbers standpoint, to say out loud that, you know, over half of the working age population is female, slightly over half. But only about in operations on boots on the ground, they represent about 5% of the workforce. The numbers vary a little bit, but they don't vary that much more from that 5% number. That's one focus that just screams respect. Just screams that we have to convey it in how we communicate, and both in the pre-hiring, the recruiting pre-hiring phase. Which, if you're working with unions as a general contractor, we're talking about the connection to their apprenticeship and pre-apprenticeship programs, and trying to identify and place a special emphasis on trying to get women into the track for apprenticeship. It's true for other demographic groups as well. Again, the industry still, you know, underserves Black individuals. And as you probably know, demographically speaking, roughly 30 or so percent of the construction industry workforce are not women, are not Black, they're Hispanic. And so there, those are all, and again, I probably should find a different word to use other than manpower, now that I think about it. You're causing me to think, which means I'm gonna need a nap after this conversation. But you know, that's interesting that I just automatically that's a bias. So yep. I'm guilty of a bias. I'm referring to people that work in the construction industry as being part of the manpower of the construction industry. So you've helped me just by saying a couple things to recognize that I've had a bias that I need to correct, because again, it's not about men, it's not about women, it's not about Black, yellow, green, it's not about foreign, it's not about any of those things, because we're all human beings. And I feel and sense, and even the few words you've said, that's the way you look at who you are and the other people around you. And if you're doing that, you're having a tremendous effect on the people that you come in contact with, by combining your expertise along with your feelings, along with your soft skills. What are your thoughts about that?
I think so. I would say I know so, because at the end of the day, you know, if you look at everybody as human beings, which, I mean, we're all genetically different, but we're really human beings at the end of the day, and you treat people, some people say, you know, treat folks like you want to be treated. Well, I mean, those people aren't necessarily me, so you really should treat people how they want to be treated. Get to know those individuals. I mean, I heard, man, it was a couple weeks ago, we were reading this book, John Maxwell, 21 Irrefutable Laws, but it says, you know, before you can ask for a hand, you got to ask for a heart. Mm-hmm. You know, and part of asking for a heart is really getting to know people for who they are, you know, where they come from, what they do outside of work. And then you can start asking for a hand, you know, asking for help. But if you're not getting to know those folks for who they are, it's kind of hard to go ask somebody for something if you don't even know their name.
Exactly. Exactly. What's your personal experience been as far as, again, it kind of tips over a bit. I use the term social justice to describe everything, including the things that came into such sharp and painful focus with the George Floyd incident. But I also extend it to, again, just fairness across genders, fairness across generations, and just a general thought about equal treatment for all, because again, at the end of the day, as you correctly said, we're all human beings. And the best way for us to approach dealing with each other is to accept that. And also to accept something which I pose as a question. The question is, what's one thing that you and I have in common with every other person we come in contact with in our entire life from beginning to end? And the answer is simple. We're all different from each other. There's not another Leandra Sweden out there. There's not another Dennis Duran, but we're both human beings. So our differences, you know, there's a range of them, from education to race, ethnicity, religious background, the whole, so many ways that we're different from each other. Unfortunately, my generation, I've now confirmed that I have a bias around manpower, so I need to correct that. But the other that my generation has in spades is this whole notion of, you know, we've got the right answer, and we ain't changing nothing. So if you don't like the way we're doing it, then, you know, go someplace else.
Yep.
Do you still feel and see that in the workplace?
I would say definitely you still feel and see that. I think folks are becoming more aware with, especially in the last few years, with, you know, you have more movement around diversity, equity, and inclusion conversations. People are more open, more likely to have those conversations. But when you look at the design and construction industry, we still have a ways to go. Mm-hmm. But in terms of diversity, in terms of equitable opportunity for people that come from underrepresented communities, and in terms of inclusion, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people come into the industry and it's hard to to visualize something if you don't see anybody that looks like you in those roles. So I think people still get frustrated with that. And many people leave the industry due to that. You know, it's still an industry that kind of protects its own interests, you know, and those that are in those positions of leadership, you know. It's really up to those people to kind of change the narratives, per se, on that, you know. Yes. Like you say, a lot of people say everything rises and falls with leadership. You know, leadership owns the culture of the organizations and these companies, whether they know it or not.
Yeah.
So if you allow certain things to happen, that speaks volumes to the culture of that organization and that company.
I believe, and I think it's pretty straightforward, actually, that if you're in a position of leadership, it's, first of all, it's not defined by your level in an organization. I think, because, you know, again, there are good and bad leaders at all levels in organizations. But the leaders who provide the vision for an organization at all levels are the ones that people are carefully watching and listening to do something really simple, and that is to make sure that their words and their actions are supporting each other. And that's what provides the opportunity then to bring into the conversation another word, which is an important quality for leaders, and that is being trustworthy. And if the words and the actions just don't shake out, then trust is never going to be achieved. And those leaders are going to be they're really more posers than they are leaders. That term comes from a friend of mine, a guy named Steve Farber, who's written several books on leadership, and he talks about posers. And does it in a way that is very persuasive. And he also introduced something else, and we'll use this to kind of move into another part of our conversation. And again, this comes from his work, a book that he published, I think, 23 years ago now, but it's as useful, relevant, and easy to read, which is a quality that I like. My book was, by design, was not a big, thick book with very small type, because I probably would not have gotten through the first three pages if it was. But in this book that he wrote called The Radical Leap, he says the following. He says, do what you love in the service of people who love what you do. Pretty infallible when you think about it. Doesn't say, you know, love everything that happens to you every day, because every day is perfect and you never have any problems. And some days are, you know, there's no such thing as a bad day, blah. It doesn't say any of those things. But it talks about the necessary energy that you need to put into what you do, because as I would say, and this is a phrase that I've kind of turned recently, I remind people again, because I believe so strongly that your qualities, which are what soft skills are, that your qualities are so important to demonstrate through your words and your actions, that a person needs to keep in mind that you need to keep in your mind how you are when you're doing what you do. And that could be as simple as the expression on your face belying what words may be coming out of your mouth that are intended to be positive and constructive. But if your face ain't saying the same thing, the words ain't coming out that way. So, again, what thoughts around that kind of stuff in terms of your experiences?
Yeah, I will say, in terms of that, I've come to realize that, I think you mentioned it a little bit, but who you are, to me, matters more than what you do. You know, especially when you look in terms of leadership. I mean, a guy, Tim Spiker, wrote a book about it, and his thing was who, not what, you know. He said 75% of a leader's effectiveness is based on who they are, not what they do. Think about it. When you ask people, you know, what's the, you know, best leader you ever followed, who's the best leader you ever followed, most of the things that people name about that person is going to be who they were, not necessarily what they did. You know, and then when you start reflecting on who you are, it's really your character as an individual.
Yeah.
You mentioned trust earlier. You know, trust is really the foundation of a lot of things, especially in relationships. But, you know, character, it really boils down to, you know, who you are. You know, and if you're not really modeling what you teach, it's kind of hard for people to want to follow you. So
let me ask you a question. And around this whole notion of who you are as opposed to what you do, that's particularly true in terms of trying to demonstrate as a leader at the operations level, the kind of behaviors that motivate the individuals that you're responsible for, your crew, your team, however you call that collection of individuals that are together for a common purpose to complete a job or a project. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, absolutely. I think people are always one way or another. They're always watching what we do. A lot of times folks are trying to figure out if they're going to allow themselves to be led by you. Mm-hmm. If you're in those leadership positions, you know, and they're really looking to see who you are, how you demonstrate that, and do you actually do what you say you're going to do? Mm-hmm. You know, so, I mean, it's just really paramount that, I guess, like the first agreement and the four agreements was be impeccable with your word, mm-hmm. you know. So if you say you're going to do something, do it,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
The difference between saying, I was listening to a podcast earlier this morning on the way into work, but there was a guy talking on there, and he was talking about the difference between saying that you want to do something and saying that you will do something. Hmm. When you say that you want to do something, you're not really on the hook anymore. If you say that I will do something, then you've now put yourself on the hook to figure out how to do that because you said that you will do it.
Right.
You know, yes. So there's a difference. Same letter,
yeah.
number of words, yeah. but, you know, saying won't and will is just two yeah. different things.
Yeah. And that's in a simple sense, that's what integrity is. And yep. that's the big boy's word, but it's also, you know, in the book I wrote back, it was published back in 2019, I surveyed a bunch of people and asked them to force rank a long list of words that describe soft skills, qualities of people, and to come up with, I came up with the top 20 from this survey I did. It probably wouldn't be surprising to you, again, in part because of the time you've spent in the lean community, that the number one soft skill in this survey was trustworthiness. Mm-hmm. And when you think about that, and it's why I describe to people, this is a conversation we're having. We're not trying to drill down any particular topic. And I think that, you know, to be able to touch on trust and trustworthiness, I think is important because there are many ideas, many beliefs, many truths that need to be told repeatedly. Again, sometimes, you know, people don't understand, you know, what it means to be trustworthy. They think they do, but when you get down to it, it's a multidimensional consideration. And it's something which I know you would say that probably the same words. Trust is something that takes a long time to put in place between individuals and relationships. And you mentioned relationships, which are hugely important, but it can be broken in a matter of seconds. Like a snap of a finger, trust can be broken between two people or between two organizations. But, you know, everything is done at the level of people. We don't have relationships with companies in a full encompassing sense. We have a business relationship, a legal relationship if it's contractual. Yep. I think that's really interesting. In the area of social justice, I want to move into something else. We're getting close to the end of our time together. And that is your thoughts about the state of the industry as you see it with regards to dealing with the issues associated with mental health, addiction and suicide. Where are we in, from what you see?
From what I see, I believe that we're in the infancy stages of kind of acknowledging how some of the, I guess, work environments contribute to people's mental health states. Some of the suicide rates, a lot of the stress that people are under, the way that we manage and facilitate the project job sites. I mean, all this stuff comes into play. You know, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. Needless to say, we hadn't really, I guess, become more efficient in the last several years. You can look at over time, you know, how we do things. And I believe a lot of it is due just to a lack of understanding how what we do ties into other industries and some things we can take away from those industries and learn mm-hmm. about construction. But it is a very high, stressful job sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
We spend a lot of time at work, in work environment, typically more time than you spend at home. So if you work in a toxic, stressful work environment, you can see how those things translate.
Yeah, yeah. Well said. I agree with you. The last question is, when you hear the word love, let's call it in the work part of your life, what does that word mean to you?
Love in the work part of my life. I mean, I think that to me means extending your feelings and the way that you feel about people throughout the job site. I mean, we spend a lot of time with individuals. You develop relationships over a project, whether it's, you know, 6 months, 8 months, a year, two years. Who you are, again, I think plays a big part in the love that you have for the people there. I mean, if you're in a leadership role, I believe one of the things to lead people well is actually being able to demonstrate that you love that person. Mm-hmm. You know, doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily say, you know, hey, I love everything about them, but, you know, and being in that role, you are really there to serve other people. Mm-hmm. So in doing that, that love is going to come out. You know, you should be able to demonstrate that. It may not be the easiest thing to do. Mm-hmm. Like they say, sometimes you may have tough love, but at the end of the day, you know, we got an opportunity to do some things differently. You know, how do you show that, hey, we got issues to take care of, we got problems, but at the end of the day, hey, we need to be able to work together. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well said. Beautifully said, actually. Unfortunately, our time is up. Our time is up. And they cracked the whip on me to try to keep these segments to 30 or so minutes. Thank you so much for everything you had to say. Your wisdom shines through. Your sound footing and the lean practices comes through clearly. And I loved the way you talked about love as our closing thought. So, Leandris, thank you so much for coming and joining me on the Softest Deal podcast.
Awesome. Thank you, Dennis.
Take care.
Thanks for joining us today for this episode of the Softest Deal podcast with your host, Dennis Duran. Dennis is the author of Softest Deal and a leading speaker and trainer for organizations across many industries and verticals. To learn more about the work Dennis is doing to activate soft skills in the workplace, contact him at DennisDuranSpeaking.com. Be sure to check out his book, Softest Deal, on Amazon or wherever books are sold. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or wherever you'd like to get your podcasts. And please remember to share this episode with your friends, colleagues, and anyone you feel would benefit from the conversation. We'll see you next time on the Softest Deal podcast with Dennis Duran.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.